Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers kicking off Tuesday night, a stretch of six games that could be really important for getting themselves on the right side of things before the hard stuff begins. We'll talk about that. Plus, was Dwight Howard really snubbed from the All 75 team? We'll do that next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I want to thank everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day. Monday through Friday, got a new show for you each and every one of those days. Reminder as well, subscribe to the Locked On Lakers YouTube channel. Sometimes get the podcast a little early, particularly on non-game nights and all the breaking news and stuff like that. So, Andy, as we still continue to bask in the glow of Sunday's first win of the season, there is a lot still, as we talked about on Monday's show, that the Lakers need to fix, a lot of stuff that's a work in progress. Nobody really thinks that one win, particularly the way that they want it, is like, okay, everything's all good. There's still a lot to go over. The Lakers have big rotation questions. Austin Reeves got in there and played very well. Both of us have questions, not just about DeAndre Jordan, but also Dwight Howard and how the centers are playing. Russell Westbrook still rounding into form, but a lot of things, Andy, probably need to get addressed, or at the very least, the Lakers have a prime opportunity to get ahead of some of these things over the next six games. They are not going to have an easier stretch than they will have at any point in the season beyond the next six. Like, it doesn't get softer than that in the NBA.
Yeah, you're looking at where it begins today with a game against the Spurs. Then they've got a second end of a back-to-back, but it's against the Thunder. Then you go a game against Cleveland, back-to-back games against Houston, followed by the bookends of the Thunder. So basically four of your six games are against teams that, all things being equal, would not like to win many games. And depending on how the season goes, Cleveland may join those ranks pretty soon.
We were talking about Houston and Oklahoma City. Andy, even if they wanted to win games, they don't have players.
It's important to point out that, again, while, you know, tanking can sometimes be too over-applied a catch-all phrase, because the players themselves, more often than not, do want to win. I mean, they don't really care about what happens to the franchise's fortunes, because a lot of them know they're not going to be a part of it anyway, right? And they want to be seen as a winning player. But that being said, you're talking about four games against teams that are quite frankly designed not to win.
Right. I mean, Oklahoma City, and if this were European soccer, these are teams that would get relegated next year to the G League. And, you know, San Antonio is not terrible, but they're not going to be. For reference points, all six of these games are against teams that are between 24 and 30 in the NBA in ESPN's power rankings and SI's power rankings. Like, these are bottom five,
the Spurs,
bottom six teams.
People are already talking about whether or not this will be Pop's last year because of the way the franchise is currently set up, what lies ahead. They're marking how many wins it will be required for Pop to win this year to potentially go out as the all-time winningest coach. Like, this is not a team that is set up for particularly big success. The only reason you would even talk about the Spurs as a, you know, well, maybe they get into the play-in despite what's there on the roster, is just because of Pop. That's it.
Pop, legacy. I mean, they've got, you know, DeJounte Murray is a good player.
No, shut up. It's Pop.
No, they're not good.
And the Spurs, period.
Right.
That's
all
it.
Right, fair.
That's it.
So, you know, given what the Lakers have, like, this is something that, you know, I saw on YouTube, somebody left a joke. You know, we were talking about practice time and this and that and whatever on a show. And somebody noted, like, given the age of this team, I would expect that they'd only practice, you know, five or six more times the rest of the season. And they were making a joke about the age and this and that. And there is some truth to that. The Lakers will rest more on their off days than other teams. They'll certainly rest a lot of their players at the very least. But, you know, dirty little secret, every team in the NBA is basically in that boat. Once the season gets going, there is very little practice time. And as we noted in Monday's show, the Lakers, because of that, really do have to treat a lot of these games as dressing. rehearsals and, you know, you're working on things on the fly. Frank talked about it Sunday night. Like, they installed some of those Russell Westbrook, LeBron James screen and rolls where Russ is the one setting the screen, or Russ is pinning down for Anthony Davis in the corner and popping. But that came in on like Sunday morning. And so you see these things executed in games almost in real time. That's hard to do against good teams, Memphis, Phoenix. You know, Golden State could end up, you know, winning 10 of their first 12 the way their schedule lays out. They're, you know, these are decent teams. It is doable against Oklahoma City. It's more doable against Houston, against San Antonio. So, like, if you're going to get these real time kind of dress rehearsal practices in, you have to take advantage of them and really build on the teams.
Yeah, and you know, Frank Vogel is going to be figuring out a lot of things just on the fly in terms of the rotation. Like, for example, we wanted to get into Austin Reeves. Mm-hmm. He got his first run of the regular season Friday, or I believe that was actually when he made his debut. But certainly,
correct. Yeah, he did not. He was DNP in the opener. He played Friday against Phoenix, and again on Sunday.
And it all came in the fourth quarter against Phoenix.
Friday.
And then Sunday he played in both halves against Memphis in the win. And it, what was interesting about that to me was, you know, there have been a lot of clamoring for Austin Reeves throughout the preseason and wondering about whether or not he could actually be in the rotation, particularly with the Lakers missing so many players. And Vogel, by not playing him in game one, you know, threw some cold water seemingly on that enthusiasm. And then he ended up playing Austin Reeves for the entire fourth quarter, which turned into a mini comeback of sorts against the Suns on Friday. And it reminded me, Brian, of the way Alex Caruso during Vogel's first season as the Lakers head coach, you know, Alex Caruso just got that big boy contract. He wasn't a two-way guy at that point. He had an actual NBA contract, but he still had a really small sample size as an NBA player. And Vogel in the beginning did not seem particularly enamored with Caruso, who I entered that season wondering if there was a chance he could potentially start. Mm-hmm. And what I thought was really interesting about that with Vogel and Caruso that reminded me of Vogel and Reeves is he first started playing Caruso in the fourth quarter, like during these high leverage moments. And then Caruso won him over and he ended up becoming this real mainstay.
Right. In part because his value was so sort of like the thing that made him so valuable was that it's most tangible in a lot of ways in the fourth quarter because of his ability on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, exactly. And he ended up going from a guy that I think Vogel just for whatever reason, and it might've been just, I don't really know who this player is, didn't entirely trust Caruso. And then he ended up a really important part of things. And I just thought it was really interesting that Vogel looked to, you know, I mean, the game may have seemed out of hand when he first put Reeves in there, but once they started making a comeback, he didn't take him out. And, right. And like a lot of times coaches, once you start get rolling, you start relying on more proven commodities. He kept Reeves out there and it's felt to me like that was sort of the start of a potential role in this rotation.
And I tell you where I think the other parallel to Caruso is apt here, and not just because they are both sort of unassuming looking white dudes who are non-drafted free agents, plucky and all that kind of, I mean, those comparisons are obvious. But the other thing about it is their strengths in a lot of ways are accentuated by playing with your best players. And I think that is the other reason why Caruso sometimes would struggle with reserve units and thrive more with starters, because what he was good at was really smart defensive plays, making the right rotation and kind of doing those little things make a lot of other players around him better. What he is bad at or worse at was taking on a larger offensive role or having to direct the offense as a point guard, which he wasn't terrible at, but it was, and even when, you know, last year when he was a critical part of the last couple of years, that wasn't his, none of those things were his strength.
Yeah, he got better as he went along.
He got
along,
better but at still, it, but it's not it what still he does. Wasn't, it wasn't what he was sort of known for. He was a great guy to have on the floor often as a wheel greaser, but not as a lead point guard in that kind of way. And that's sort of the way that we think about it. Reeves is similar that way in that he is going to be able to be at his best when he can work off of LeBron, work off of guys who are going to be in the right. And also particularly guys who will support him defensively by kind of giving structure so that he only has to do one or two things, which he will do correctly or try to do. He's not getting lost. It's just a question of, you know, whether or not he's the kind of the ability to keep up athletically and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I look, small sample size theater, I get it. Through two games, the Lakers as a team have a negative 3.7 net rating. In the two stints that Reeves has on the floor, his net rating is 57. So, like, I get it. It doesn't necessarily mean, oh, yes, other good things have happened in the two games where Reeves has played. He has a net rating of 57 on a team that is underwater in that regard. And so I do think you are going to see him play more because, and I think you'll see him play with the starters in a lot of, because it fits. And you can get the most out of him in those minutes. I thought he played great on Sunday, and I'd be shocked if he wasn't a pretty prominent part of Tuesday's game too. One thing though, that is getting a ton of criticism though, Andy, is the center rotation, starting with the starting center, DeAndre Jordan. But is that only half the story of what the problem is? We'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by DirecTV Stream. So here's the scenario. You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, the other one that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend who heard from this guy who knows this kid who's going out with a girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night, her login for the good stuff. There's a simpler way to get all that entertainment you love, including showings of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, without the hassle. And it's a great way to get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream. It brings all your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite shows, movies, and sports all in one place. No more juggling remotes. No need to ever buy another device. And the best part, no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter, the confusion. Get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. A compatible device is required. Content varies by package.
So, Andy, you and I debated a little bit on Monday's show, kind of how well, you know, our impressions of DeAndre Jordan in Sunday's loss. I was less impressed with him than you were.
Well, I mean, impressed is a very relative term.
I was about to say, with the caveat that impressed is not necessarily you weren't impressed.
Here's how I
thought he was less problematic than I did.
Here's how I would put it, just to set the table properly for this conversation.
Yes. Okay.
I am not so much impressed by DeAndre Jordan as I'm less depressed. Fair?
No, I think that's fine. I think that is actually a good way of putting it. You are, I think, still, even with that, on the more optimistic side or agnostic side on the impact of DeAndre Jordan than many Lakers fans and Lakers observers. Again, this is not the lineup that you're voting for. This is not the lineup that you're advocating. All that you're saying is it may not be as bad as people want it to be because they are angry at the concept as much as they are the player. Would that be fair?
Yes. Okay. And I think I had a conversation with Dama Rangula, great follow on Twitter, big time Lakers fan, friend of the show, about DeAndre Jordan. And the way I feel about this is, for these three games, he has been neither the solution nor the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I also,
that, by the way, is my goal in life, to kind of skate through that way.
Well, no, actually, you know what? I've lately decided it's better to be a solution.
I mean, it is better. I mean, I'm innately sort of late. My innately lazy side is happy to just sort of skate that line. At least don't be a problem.
But what I also think that is kind of getting lost with DeAndre is that he's really playing a nominal role on this team. Like, DeAndre Jordan is basically the 10th man on the Lakers. He is a 10th man who happens to start, and you can disagree with the decision to start him, as frankly, I do. It's not the way I would go, but it doesn't change the fact that he's still a 10th man, and there's only so much you would expect from a 10th man on any team. Like, you know, I'm not even saying he's a great 10th man. I'm just saying, like,
he's not at all.
But you have to separate what he quote unquote represents, which is not DeAndre Jordan's fault, versus his actual effect on the court, which I think has been at times good. Like there's some times where he's thrown down some lobs. There's been times where I think he's been a legitimately good lane deterrent. And there have been other times where he frankly hasn't rebounded as much as he's needed to. He seems incapable of having, as we talked about, second efforts. Like,
just the, you know, the athletic, not that he's not trying, but the athletically he is not capable of that second jump. The verticality that he is supposed to bring isn't quite as vertical as you would want from somebody of his height.
But the other thing, though, that you and I were talking about that underscores why I think DeAndre has been much too overblown a talking point is I think it's overshadowed how Dwight hasn't played any better than DeAndre Jordan. You could actually make arguments that he's played worse than him, certainly no better, but people have not really, or at least that I've seen, been complaining about Dwight because Dwight comes off the bench, which is where they see him as properly slated, and therefore he's not taking away anything from them that they want. But for example,
your whataboutism here isn't what about Jordan playing well. It's, hey guys, this guy over here. And like to your point, Andy, you know, the numbers, again, small sample size, only three games. Of the two Lakers that have played the most in these three games, you know, DeAndre Jordan, Dwight Howard, all three, both of them have been in all three games. They have played basically the same function in all three games. They have the two worst net ratings on the team. Dwight's is worse than DeAndre's. Now, and particularly on the defensive side. Now, to be fair, Dwight also has typically played more minutes with worse defensive players.
Oh no, Dwight's got his handful in some of those units.
I
actually feel bad for him.
Who do I think has been the better player? I would say Dwight has been better. But I think what you're pointing to here is that the Lakers are really struggling when they have those guys on the floor. Well, and I think, you know, whether you think it's Jordan is trash and you know, shouldn't play, or, you know, Dwight's getting it. The larger point here is the sort of the shorthand for what numbers we have available say that the Lakers, when they have those guys on the floor, are struggling in a big way.
Okay, here's a number that is not even necessarily small sample size, certainly not anything that can be debated. It's just fact. You know how many offensive rebounds Dwight has in three games?
Is this like the thing with Russell Westbrook yesterday?
Nope.
I thought it was a trick. I'm going to say two.
Zero.
0.0.
He has zero offensive rebounds. And that is one of the big reasons you brought in Dwight in the first place.
To be clear, is that because the Lakers haven't missed while he's on the floor?
No.
because if that were the case, that would be unfair to Dwight. Like they're just so good offensively that the ball is always in the basket. And you know, no,
that's one theory for why it's happened. The other theory is he hasn't gotten any offensive rebounds.
Right.
I'm not bringing this up like simply to go at Dwight. Like, you know, later on in the show, actually,
no, we're going to defend Dwight here in a couple.
We're going to be launching a very staunch and I think very heartfelt defense of Dwight. I just think that
Dwight's career.
Yeah, Dwight's career.
not Dwight's first three games.
Sure. But I do think, though, that sort of, again, the avatar that DeAndre Jordan has become, which is basically the Andre Drummond avatar of last season, I think has in a lot of ways warped the perception of a few things. None of this is to say, by the way, that I'm lobbying for more minutes for DeAndre or that, like, I think he's been underrated this season.
No.
You can pull him out of the rotation.
I look at it and I put it in the bucket of things the Lakers need to figure out. You know, we talked on Monday's show that, you know, Westbrook, there is a lot that is way off. And even with yesterday's game, which we both thought was the best one that he's played of the three, low bar to clear. He still turned the ball over 9 times and shot 5 of 15 from the floor. While both of us feel that, you know, the volume of shots that he's taken is about right. Like he's taking about 14 and a half a game or something like that. That's fine. That is well within a totally acceptable range. You just want him to hit at a higher efficiency. Our friend Krangis McBasketball from the Lakers Exceptionalism pod noted today that, you know, no player in the league though has taken more shots inside the first 8 seconds or 9 seconds of the shot clock than Westbrook. Now, some of that is him getting to the rim, mm-hmm. and where he's not finishing very well, but five of those shots, very, again, early in the season, are three-pointers, early clock three-pointers. No thank you. No thank you, Russ. That is not a good shot. And, you know, ideally over the course of the season, you want those things to even out. You want the shot selection and the shot volume to be good. So there's a lot to work out in a lot of these places. Defensively, there's a lot to work out. But, you know, one of the things, like, as much as I want them, I think, to be us, you know, go small more than traditional center, they do need to be able to function with traditional centers on the floor, because there are going to be minutes where Dwight Howard and DeAndre Jordan play. And early signs, at least, show that they're getting crushed in those minutes. And they need to figure that out. That's part of what they need to figure out.
Like, you know, when you mention how a lot of this is truly small sample size theater, like, for example, DeAndre's, you know, plus minus from Sunday's game against Memphis, which ironically I think was the best game he's played of the three this season. You know, he was on the floor early on when the Lakers fell behind because they turned the ball over five times in the first, like, 4 or 5 minutes, none of which really had anything directly
which
again, this is not about defending DeAndre or talking about how guys are like, how fans are underappreciating this diamond in the rough. Like, that's
Andy, the chair recognizes the delegate from Jordanistan.
But like, again, like all of this stuff is context, and all of it's going to be provided a fuller picture as the season goes along. And you are correct that they do need to find ways to make it work. However, you could also argue that they should look for the fewest moments possible to make it work, if at all you can manage it. And one thing, bringing it full circle, could be increased play for a guy like Austin Reeves. And if you were looking to configure the rotation a little bit differently, you could start making him an early substitution, possibly for DeAndre Jordan,
or
going,
or you could just start him.
Well, you could start him. You could start him sliding AD to the five. I don't think Vogel's going to do that. You could, but if you're looking to split the difference and I guess perhaps minimize some of what you see with DeAndre, you could put Austin Reeves out there, in part because it would fit with those lineups, but also too, it makes sense, like we talked about before, to put Reeves out there with as many experienced players as possible, and you're going to make that happen by putting him in early.
Right, both because it accentuates the skill set that Reeves mm-hmm. brings, while also keeping him from having to do stuff that he doesn't do as well, and making the team, like, the ball moves. I mean, it's a lot of that stuff. The ball just moves. You heard Stu Lance talking about it. You heard Michael Thompson talking about it on the broadcast. Really, he is a smart player who does, you know, quality basketball, little basketball things. And those things are important. He's a lot like Larry Nance in that regard. You know, just there's certain guys who benefit playing around other good players. Otto Porter Jr. is like that with Golden State this year. They're just, and so, like, stuff like that's going to matter. And, you know, I will say this, and we've fans are going to have to reserve judgment to see what it looks like when more guys are back. But the problem with this is, and this gets to roster construction, we can deal with it in another show. I don't want to get buried on this because we're going to get to Dwight. They left themselves in a position where their flexibility to do a lot of these things is dependent on the health of Trevor Ariza. Just going to leave that out there. as somebody who supported generally what they did, but, you know, we both kind of raised some hands on, like, guys, what about, or in the off season, their flexibility to do a lot of these things is based on the health of Trevor Ariza. Up next, Andy explains why DeAndre Jordan was unfairly snubbed from the NBA's All 75 team.
Oh, I got thoughts on this, baby.
No, but in all seriousness, Dwight Howard has said it was disrespectful that he was left off that team. Is he correct? We'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Back better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season. More props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online remains the number one spot for all basketball, football action this season. So head to the new updated desktop and mobile website. Sign up today. Receive your 50% welcome bonus for your first deposit. Just use the promo code Locked On to receive that bonus. From basketball, football, baseball postseason, NHL, boxing, UFC, right down to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage for all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. Bet online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Bet online, where the games start.
Andy, this episode is also brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models out there, it's impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock everything that you need. And why endure pointless or even sometimes intimidating questions? Is your Odyssey an LX or an EX? Does it have this or that? It's a van. It's my minivan. You know, I'm a guy with a minivan who's not here to answer all
your
questions.
I'm just some dork driving around.
Once you get one of these things, you understand they are phenomenal.
No, actually, but anyway, I spent like the first 2 or 3 months you had that minivan making fun of you, and then I've kind of realized
you get in that thing. Pretty cool. Fantastic. Yeah.
I mean, I still don't want one, but pretty cool.
Well, you don't really need it either, but that's neither here nor there, Andy. But I don't want to, once I settle on a part, I don't want the guy ordering it for me because that's what the part he wants me to get it, because it's sitting in the warehouse and he needs to get rid of it. And I want what I know I need, and I can figure that out at rockauto.com, because my Honda Odyssey, the aforementioned Honda Odyssey in my driveway right now, fuel pump from a chain store, $353. You know how much that costs at rockauto.com? $216. So inexpensive, Andy. All the kids on my block are getting this year for trick-or-treating. Rockauto.com, it's a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Low prices for every customer. So go to rockauto.com, see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in there. How did you hear about us box? So they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. All right. So, Andy, Dwight Howard said it was disrespectful. He hasn't spoken with, like, you know, it was a big Instagram thing or something. It was just said Dwight Howard, his opinion on being left off the all 75 team that the NBA put out, 75 greatest, disrespectful. Frank Vogel agreed. He's exactly right. Is disrespectful? It's wrong. Like, Dwight Howard should be on the list of the 75 greatest NBA players of all time. And I am wildly indifferent, broadly speaking, to this list. And even I am sort of outraged that Dwight isn't on it.
Well, you know, it truly is disrespect, because it's all about these people, the voters, which is people
fans,
in media.
It's media and former players.
Right, exactly. Well, former and current players.
Current, yes.
So it speaks to the way a lot of people feel about Dwight, I think, as a person.
Yes.
And it is no secret that around the league, in a lot of different circles, Dwight has been not respected as a person.
He might be the least popular. We talked about this a lot when he first rejoined the Lakers a couple years ago. The least popular player in the NBA among peers and media.
Oh, yeah. And this is not speculation on our part. We've heard this stuff.
Research.
Yes. We know.
This is reporting.
Right. And I suspected, I guess maybe incorrectly, that some of this had been alleviated by what he did with the Lakers and sort of that career resuscitation. But clearly it's not. And look, it just ain't right. I mean, like, whatever you feel about Dwight, you know, in terms of his personality, his persona, his general vibe. And look, I get it. Sometimes, even as somebody who thinks he's done some damage control, I think it can be too much. Mm.
As the kids would say, he's extra.
His first 9 or 10 years in the league, that dude was a force. He was an absolute force. And, you know, while defensively is what he was most recognized for, he was, you know, people say he was limited offensively. Okay, fine, whatever. He still was really damn hard to stop around the basket.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm just going back. I had some different numbers that I was, you know, we're going up. I mean, he averaged 20 points a game, 1, 2, 3, 4 times. He shot in those seasons like 58% or better. Like was he a guy with a wide variety of offensive, you know, talent? No, but he led the league in rebounding 5 times. He led the league in blocks twice. He is a defensive player of the year. How many times?
4, I believe.
4-time defensive player of the year.
3 or 4.
Was, was one of the most three-time defensive player of the year, 8 All-Star games, was one of, in his time, like the most transcendent defensive players that the league has ever seen. And if you're going to say that this is a game with two ends to it, you can't ignore Dwight Howard and what he did. And I think, you know, when you go back and you break some of these things down, even setting aside like where he ranks in the active lists, you know, 10th or 11th in rebounds, he's, you know, top 15 in blocks, he's, you know, top 50 in minutes played and all these other, there was, you know, a 5 or 6 year stretch where he was one of the best players the league had ever seen. Again, in terms of being a two-way force. And, you know, what struck me about this is so often guys get credit, and not just in basketball, but in sports generally, in politics, in, you know, economic stuff, whatever, celebrity, whatever it might be, guys get credit for style over substance. When you start looking, you just like them so much. You like the way they do an interview. You like the way they play, whatever it is, so much that you're willing to overlook some of the actual substance of what they're doing. I think Dwight is the opposite of that. Dwight gets dinged almost exclusively in this kind of ranking for style. People don't like him. And, you know, and he's always been an awkward interview, and he's always been, you know,
tries way too hard.
He's too silly. And, you know, the Kobe, the year with Kobe probably didn't help in terms of his public image and all that stuff.
He made a very, very grave error that year upon his exit, trying to get the last word against Kobe. As you know, somebody who interviewed Kobe, I don't know how many times we did it over the years, hundreds. Mm. And we both had a good relationship with Kobe. But I can tell you right now, having witnessed a lot of this, you never get the last word against Kobe Bryant.
Nope.
Never.
And it's just, like, it was.
Those may recall as Dwight exited and he had some things to sort of say about the Lakers. Kobe just posted a picture of him and Powell on Instagram and Twitter. And that was his double middle fingers to Dwight, who famously during the meeting to bring Dwight back, Kobe basically like put his feet up on the desk and dared him.
Right, wearing like sweatpants and whatever, you know. But Dwight was a terrible messenger for, you know, realistic questions about the Lakers and the direction they were going. But point being, like, all of that stuff should be set aside for you know, with the idea that, you know, he is a guy who is unquestionably one of the 75 greatest players of all time. And it, you know, and we can finish here. It does get to, like, Anthony Davis made the team. These are hard lists to come up with. I get all that. And it does lead to interesting sort of discussions about, like, is Anthony Davis objectively one of the 75 best players to ever play? Yes, I think just in terms of skill and impact.
I mean, honestly, I don't know. Some of these old timey dudes,
right. And, you know, he's better than the old timey dudes. Like it's not necessarily fair. Yeah. Like, you know, we've come a long way. Like, you know, people and like player development and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, health and all these other things.
The whole integrating the league racially thing
that made a difference, you know. But like, just like, there's a lot of things that players do now that, if, you know, you could transport guys from the 1970s and give them today's fitness regimens and food and nutrition, like, they'd be better too. Like, everybody smoked 14 packs a day back then. But
yeah,
like,
but they did a lot of cows though. They did a lot of calisthenics.
What are we going to do? What's our response to this?
And they drank a lot of tonics.
Right, we're going to touch our toes.
Yeah, Wonder tonics.
I mean, but like, you know, it was the Stone Age back then. But like, is Anthony Davis, objectively speaking, skill wise, one of the 75 best? Sure. Okay. Yeah, probably. Is he one of the 75 most accomplished? Yeah, it's a different question. And is he more accomplished than Dwight Howard? No.
I love AD. Glad he's on this team. He was a monster in the bubble. He is a huge, huge force.
I actually read Lakers. That to my child last night at bedtime. Monster in the bubble.
For the Lakers getting that championship, he meant more to it than Dwight. That being said, Anthony Davis is in his like 9th, 10th season, something like that, in the league. Dwight's opening 10
were better than AD's.
And it's not even close. Like, you know, absolutely, how much I love Damian Lillard. Damian Lillard may be my favorite
Dwight
player
Howard's
in the
first
league.
10 years in the league are better than Damian Lillard's. No question.
Dwight
more
Damian
impactful,
Lillard,
more meaningful, yes.
And
more
I
transcendent.
Love,
and there is right, but they, and I don't, and I don't get me wrong, Dame Lillard people. There's a lot of substance to Damian Lillard.
Of course there is.
But there's there's a lot of style. There's a lot to love about his attitude, about his personality, whatever, that boosts him up in this kind of vote.
Of course. Look, I tweeted
that's
this
what I'm just saying. He's a good example of the style getting you points over substance in this case, even acknowledging, like, there's a lot there. Dwight is just, it's not fair.
If you're really going to hold it against Dwight Howard, some of the personality stuff, you really got to take a harder look at some of the personalities of the dudes that made the list. Rick Barry, renowned red ass. Kevin Garnett, he could certainly cross some lines. Like, you know.
Ask Jose Calderon.
You know, Shaq, incredible. Healed on company time. Like, you know, there's a lot of stuff you can hold against people. Dennis and Rodman.
None of those people are Dennis as awkward Rodman. As Dwight Howard, though.
Dwight, sure.
Dwight is on the all 75 team of just awkward humans that have come through the league.
No, I get it. I'm just saying.
No, you're right. You're
you
right,
got to be
right.
Fair if you're going to do this stuff. I'm not even suggesting that you should. I'm just saying if you're going to do it, be fair.
He's the only guy that I've, again, very casually been paying attention to all this because I really genuinely don't care. But like where I look at it and go, yeah, that's not right. I mean, you know, I've seen Clay. I've seen the Warriors did a great job trolling Clay, giving him that 77 jersey, which he leaned into. Clay doesn't belong on that list. I don't think, but I also don't care. Dwight really does. Dwight's probably a top 50 guy, you know, if you want to start breaking it down. But anyway.
Pretty damn good.
All right. So critical stretch for the Lakers beginning Tuesday night in San Antonio and moving into Wednesday, the back-to-back starting Oklahoma City. They need to both figure out, as we talked about on Monday's show, ways to win games but also improve in the process. Next six games are key to that and will pay dividends or not later in November as we get into the holidays. So again, reminder to subscribe to Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Make us your first listen of every day, and we'll see everyone on Wednesday.
Oh, a heads up really quick. Wednesday, Mo DeKeel will be joining us for the show because you may not be there. So Mo is going to be with us. He's awesome. You know his work from Bleacher Report. He's incredible.
Awesome.
And very excited to have him.
All right. We'll see everyone Wednesday.